The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Joshua Karayevsky. You are listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Lockard, and today I'm very lucky to be joined by Kelly Waters. Kelly, why don't you say hello, give a quick overview?
Hi there.
Hey. So can you give us a little bit about your history and what got you into the world of Agile, sir?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess I've been in the software development industry for a really long time now. I started as a trainee programmer when I left school at 16, so over 30 years in software now. And some years ago, maybe 15 years ago, discovered, like many others behind the Agile Manifesto, that actually we were finding different ways of developing software, especially in projects that were having problems or super urgent. And never really looked back since then, obviously kind of learning lots of different techniques to help projects go better. So in terms of my career, I started as a programmer. I kind of moved up through the ranks of programming to a tech lead, then into project management and spent quite a few years doing project management, and then into more senior general management roles like head of development and then ultimately CTO. So kind of seen many different approaches come and go, and I've been sharing lots of information and knowledge on those topics on my blog and more recently setting up my own consultancy to help others with those kinds of challenges.
Cool. And for the listeners, they obviously can hear you're from Texas.
Right. Yeah, so, I'm from Kent in England, and I have a little bit of Australian accent after spending a couple of years there, I'm told, but No Australian.
So yeah, it's super confusing for Americans to be able to decipher English from Australian, from Irish, from a bunch of the other accents. So I definitely, I'm picking up the British with the little Australian twang. So you spent some time in Australia, I think, for ThoughtWorks, right?
Yeah, I was with ThoughtWorks for a couple of years in Sydney. And I was always accused of being Australian before I went to Australia. So I think I've always been Australian at heart.
Was that for a fondness of Foster's beer, or just is it the rebel blood?
Who knows? But yeah, I spent a couple of years there with ThoughtWorks, and that was a great couple of years. I loved it in Australia, and having trouble shaking off the little bit of accent I picked up in those 2 years.
So you were a practice lead for ThoughtWorks, and I think you're at least the fourth ThoughtWorks person that we've had on this podcast. We've had Martin Fowler, of course. We've had Jim Highsmith, Chris Merman, and now you. Is there something to the ThoughtWorks DNA that attracts amazing talent, or is this just dumb luck, or do I have some weird fascination with ThoughtWorks where I just want to interview everybody from ThoughtWorks?
I think it's because ThoughtWorks have always positioned themselves as thought leaders, and they tend to bring on people who have an opinion on software methodologies and industry practices. And so many thought workers are kind of people who have that already built into their DNA. So yeah, there are lots of good current or ex thought workers who've got an opinion. In fact, I think when we were there, we were like 10 thought workers in a room and 20 opinions. So always get lots of good information from ThoughtWorks people who are willing to write about their experiences or talk about their experience.
That's cool. So you also have a book out. You left, I think, author off the list when you were giving your 30-second pitch there. You wrote a book called All About Agile a few years back. Can you tell me a little bit about the book and what the intent was there, and if it's still something that if you would change anything about the book today?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I reread it recently just to see if I still agreed with myself, and on the whole, I did for sure. So I wrote it off the back of my blog. So my blog has been going for 10 years now, and I'd written lots and lots of blog posts, and some of which were very oriented towards newbies picking up Agile and really educational. That was always the intent behind the blog. And then after some time, there were about 2,000 posts there or something, and I began to realize how hard the blog format was for somebody who just wanted to read front to back. Just doesn't really lend itself so well to that kind of learning. So I decided to try and pick out the 200 or 300 posts that were, let's say, the pivotal kind of things that people really could read front to back and learn lots about Agile methods just by reading through the book. But it also means it's like I suppose every few pages is a new blog post, so people can dip in and out on individual sections or individual posts or read it cover to cover. And I thought that was the intent, really, give people a format that might lend itself a bit better to that kind of learning. So it's really like 300 or 400 blog posts in a book. And when I reread it, it focuses a lot on the basic principles of Agile, which I still really emphasize a lot today. So when I reread it, I was actually surprised after 4 or 5 years how much of it completely resonates still today.
That's awesome. I think a lot of people that have written a book and a few years have passed go back and they don't find the same thing. I know, not to say Mike Cohn doesn't agree with his books, but I remember seeing a talk that Mike Cohn gave, the Mountain Goat software guy, where he was, the topic was, it was around the idea of it's okay to be wrong, that we grow from being wrong. And he actually listed out the pages and chapters in some of his written work that he completely disagrees with now. And I thought that was a really bold stance to take in front of a room of a few hundred Agilists.
That's great. I think it's a courageous thing to say. I think, I'm not saying I'm never wrong or haven't learned, more that because it was focused on first principles, that those things stand the test of time. And there are some things about the practices I might do a little bit differently maybe nowadays, but much of it is still the core focus that I try to help teams with now.
Speaking about the practices then, the book itself, do you find yourself diving into any of the frameworks in particular? Do you do more of a meta framework type approach where you're talking about them at the roll up?
Well, that is actually the interesting thing, because the book predates the more sort of the bigger frameworks that are in use in sort of bigger enterprises now. It focuses more on the principles of Agile and Scrum, and not so much on, you know, current frameworks that are really topical at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So I think your original blog was the same title as the book, All About Agile. Or maybe the blog was named after the book. I'm not exactly sure what the provenance is there, but you eventually morphed, I think, in the last couple of years to your company now, which is called 101 Ways, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So I think when Kelly Waters' name first got mentioned to me, it was through some work you're doing with the company that I'm working for now. But you were basically a one-man outfit at that point, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Just until maybe Christmas last year, it was just me.
What the hell happened? It went from one guy to how many do you have now?
We're at about 50 now.
Yeah. How'd that happen?
great question. It feels like at first it was a happy accident, in that I was getting approached to do more work than I could possibly do. So I began to partner with a few other consultants who could do similar things for clients via my company, 101 Ways. And that kind of got us going. And by about March last year, we were about 3 people. By about May, we were 4 people. But it really exploded from sort of May, June last year to now, when we started doing a mixture of not only delivery leadership and consulting, but also doing teams. and where we started to say we can either do the delivery leadership or help you optimize or transform your processes, or we can bring a team and do the project with you and help you to deliver a new product, as well as teach you different ways of working and leave you with that at the end of the project. So that kind of approach really took off for us, and we've been adding teams as well as individual delivery roles ever since. And hey presto, now we're 50, and I think within the next few months we should reach 70 people.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're an entire ocean apart, but I find it interesting that when I look at who we, you do a pretty good job, or your team does a pretty good job, I think, sharing on social media when you onboard a new team member to 101 Ways. And I got to say, like, even though we work in completely different geo markets, every second or third person that you guys say you're bringing onto the team, I at least have heard the name, if not have read their blog or researched their work, or am personally connected with them. So it's not just that you've grown 50 to 70 people. You're actually bringing in some of the best talent in Europe, it seems like.
I like to think so. I'm sure lots of companies have great talent too, but we're spending a huge amount of effort trying to find and select people that we think are super talented, have a good opinion, but also people whose values are really aligned with ours, whose values are more along the lines of authenticity and keeping things simple and nice kind of practical help. And so that's the kind of person we've been looking for. And we've been really lucky. We've attracted some great people. And the more we do that, the more it seems to attract other great people. So it's become something that we focus a huge amount of attention on, to try and make sure that that if people are working with myself or other people at 101 Ways, that they're getting a similar kind of person, a similar experience.
That's cool, man. So you are based, 101 Ways is based in London, right?
Yeah, we're based near Old Street in the sort of heart of Tech City in London.
Yeah.
All the kind of startups and where a lot of the digital innovation is happening here.
That's awesome. So can you speak a little bit to what the state of Agile is in the London or the UK market? I know you have some really strong folks right there in that city, like Rachel Davies and some of the XP crew. I think it's XP Tuesday is the meetup that I would love to one day get to sit in on. But what is it like right now in the UK? You've done some international work. Is it similar to what we're seeing in America or what you saw in Australia? Is it ahead? Is it behind? Where do they sit in the spectrum?
Yeah, it's really hard to know, because I have done some international work in the US, Australia, and Amsterdam, as well as a lot in London, and it's kind of always hard to tell how much of that is really the whole market being ahead or behind, or whether it's really just my little skewed perspective of that from the work I'm doing. But it seemed to me like for a long, long time, US was ahead and UK was following some of the thought leadership that's happened in the US. But then I think when I was working in the US, I found that obviously there are still many organizations that hadn't even begun, and obviously there are lots of companies in the UK that were far ahead of that. So I think it does depend more on industry than location. I think like financial services being a mainstream adopter now, whereas maybe was already heavily adopted by media companies 10, 15 years ago already. So I would say to you, it's probably not one region that's ahead or behind. It's more like certain industries have been very quick to adopt Agile. Started obviously with startups, went very quickly to media and publishing, went very quickly into related domains like e-commerce, but much less quickly into financial services and government, which have only been in the more, let's say 3 to 5 years, whereas I think some of those other industries were already moving 15 years ago. And I think what I saw in the US and Australia was a similar pattern, basically. So maybe it kind of started in US, UK was following fast, Australia wasn't far behind. But certainly depends on which industry you find yourself working in.
I think that's a great answer. I mean, I worked in quite a few of the industries you already just mentioned there. And recently I've been contracted and engaged to do some training out in a geo heavy area. And when you start talking about lean or agile concepts with in a government heavy area, when you start talking to the govies about what's coming, in this agile mindset, it's it's a little disruptive to their thought patterns. And I think you're right. That's probably one of the last areas that is really coming into the fold here. Anything attached to the government, because even you mentioned Amsterdam, I think, some of the Dutch schools are now starting to take on agile thinking as a way to run this, the school system over in the Netherlands.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think government here has been, here in the UK, has been really interesting, because GDS, the government digital service, was kind of led by a lot of people who are ex-Guardian thrallers, BBC, organizations like that. Mm-hmm. I think they started to do things in such an open and transparent way, and really sharing what they were doing, how they were doing it, what they were learning, that they become a real leading light for other government departments, and not only other government departments, but also other commercial organizations. And when I've been a huge admirer of what they've done, and when I've spoken about that to other companies, especially commercial ones, they're kind of shocked that we might look to a government organization for thought leadership. But yeah, maybe some years behind kind of others in starting their journey, but the willingness to be open and share what they were learning meant that many companies were able to look up to what they were doing and learn from them. So I think, surprisingly, the UK government has been fantastic in terms of helping the agile community develop here.
So have you guys at 101 Waves done any work with the UK government?
No, we haven't. I personally did a little bit of advisory work early on, when they were first looking at on which types of projects should government think about adopting agile practices, but we haven't done any significant work for them.
Okay. I think one thing that's super interesting and invigorates me to a degree is when I speak to some recent college grads or some kids that are still in school and in the field of computer science, and you talk to them about what agile is and what the say like the extreme programming practices are, the craft of software development. As short as 3 or 4 years ago, you'd have these conversations with these guys and they'd look at you like you have three heads, but now you're starting to find out that there's a couple pocket schools, at least in the US, where they're starting to teach these principles and these practices at the university level. It gives you a little bit of hope in an otherwise convoluted agile marketplace to believe that we're starting to really grasp hold of where the value lives when it comes to teaching the next generation.
I think that's good, because I mean, I had quite a few requests to use content from my book on my blog from schools and colleges and universities in the US and UK. So I think that's kind of good, but that's actually what led to my recent LinkedIn post about being fearful about the proliferation of different agile methodologies and how they all seem to be, I call it agile methodology wars, maybe that's unfair, but how they're all competing for attention at least. And it feels extremely complicated when I look at the agile landscape now. And I wonder how a student at university or somebody new to software engineering could possibly get their head around all of that. And it feels like something that was so simple, beautifully simple, I would say, now feels so complex. It feels as complicated, or maybe even more complicated, than some of the methodologies we moved away from all those years ago. So I'm quite concerned about just how confusing and hard to learn agile is now for somebody starting a career in tech.
Is there a prototypical example you can point to as something that is overly complex in the agile world today, or is it just in general?
I think as we start to scale agile to larger and larger organizations, and we see the introduction of SAFe and other sort of larger frameworks, I think I saw a picture that tried to pull together a visual of all of the different agile methodologies and their terminology all on a single page, kind of like a tube map. So it was a very cool visual. It looked really kind of fun and interesting, but it terrified me just how much competing technology there is, how many competing techniques there are, and how somebody looking at that would have any clue what agile really is.
Yeah, it is. It's like feeding from the fire hose when you take in those larger picture landscapes and those frameworks and those tube maps. I know exactly what you're talking about there. I think that's one of those approaches where somebody is starting with a good intent. Like, I don't think any of these folks that are building out these large these large frameworks and such have bad intent, but I think what they're trying to do, I think they're trying to satisfy too many masters in one swipe.
It could well be that. No one's got bad intent, for sure. And everyone's trying to do, you know, espouse their learnings about what is good for them, what's worked for them, and share that with others. And obviously that's a good thing. I've done that too, and we all should encourage that. But the terminology is a minefield, because each one adopts a completely different terminology, and it's back to the days where it feels like in tech we're talking a foreign language again. And so I guess what I've been advocating is, especially for people who are new to this stuff, to get back to the first principles and get back to the basic values and principles of the Agile Manifesto. And because rereading it, it feels just as relevant today as it was when it was written. And what we seem to be doing is layering over it a process after process after process, or a process for every problem we've ever encountered. And of course, as we add more and more, it becomes more and more unwieldy. And in the end, it's about people. I think I said in that post, a great team can do really well without much methodology or process, and a bad team won't be saved by one. So I think I prefer to see much stronger focus on people again, over the processes, and focus on how we get people working collaboratively together, and how we get people using the right engineering practices to enable continuous delivery and so on, rather than layering on this huge amount of processes over the top, which I think adds a lot of confusion and doesn't necessarily help teams to go quickly.
I love that. I love what you just said there. That's perfect. That distills down, I think, a lot of the turbulent waters right now into a very nice package. And as you were talking, I remembered back when we were professionally connected through the same company, you and I had a phone call, and we were talking about, I think I was facing a couple of different organizational challenges and just trying to get some agile mindset items accepted internally. And I think you gave me some of the best coaching I've ever had, whether it was intentional or not. You basically said to be aware of who you're talking to. Depending on which level in the organization you're talking to, you have to change the message. Talking to the team level, you communicate in one fashion, and that is not the same fashion you communicate to the executive level. And I think I was relatively immature in the way that I was communicating, specifically with the executive level. I was trying to talk to them more about the team optics. And ever since then, it kind of shifted me. And I think that's that kind of goes hand in hand with what you were just talking about, trying to come up with additional processes and layering them on top of something that is good, and just scaling that out, to use a term that we're probably going to try to avoid here, into something that covers everything, is it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it feels like there's no one size fits all. The more you add to try and cover everything, the more crazy it starts to look. So I think all of the individual pieces of all the methodologies have their merits or have their reasons. But putting them all together to cover every situation it is slightly horrendous. And yeah, I don't remember that coaching. Right, I remember our calls, but I don't remember what I said. So I can.
Nah, it's fine. It's been a couple of years, I think. So a bit's changed.
On the executive front, picking up on that point, what I find is no executive gives two hoots what methodology you're going to use, or how you're going to go about working as a team. They care about some other outcome. They care about speed to market, or they care about quality issues, or they care about how they're going to compete with these new entrants and stay ahead. They don't really care. I haven't met one yet who really cares about whether you're going to use Agile or something else, or which flavor of Agile. They just care about, I don't mean to make them sound shallow. I mean, it's completely reasonable that they care about business outcomes. Mm-hmm. They care about value creation, or they care about improving some area of their delivery capability. And when we go to execs talking about Agile, or people kick off Agile transformations and the reason for doing them is to go Agile, it feels like it's missing the point. It feels like that may be the way that we do it, but what the real point is, what is it we're trying to achieve? What problems are we trying to solve? And which elements of which methodology might just help us with that? But usually we don't need to get into that when speaking with the more senior level execs.
Yeah. And I love the way that you frame that with the, what problems are we trying to solve? I think that's the, view that we should take almost every time we're introduced to a new situation. But often human nature says we jump straight to the solution, and we never actually get an intimate relationship with the problem itself.
Yeah, it's true. We do it when we think about software and our solutions, as well as when we think about agile and ways of working. And it's important to get as much clarity as possible about the problems that we're trying to solve, either from a tech solution or ways of working point of view. And then we can start to think about, okay, if these are the kind of problems we're having, which of the techniques would help us with that we could action right now?
Right.
Not, learn the entire ecosystem of different methodologies or apply one, but more like having the expertise and experience of many different techniques allows us to just kind of pick out two or three things that will help the team right now and improve the situation that the execs care about.
Right. So in that same vein of understanding problems, are there a few problem themes that you tend to come across with your clients, without naming any client in particular, but just something that kind of resonates as true through most or all of the clients when you get into an engagement?
Yeah, I think it's, I think there are recurring themes for sure. I think in our case, and I guess we deal with a particular type of client, but in our case, we find that our clients have done really well. They've adopted some level of agile ways of working, and their delivery is going okay, but they need to accelerate because they've got new competition and they've got new opportunities that they want to move quickly on. And in order to do that, they need to sometimes build new teams or throw new people in. And so that can be very, very difficult. Obviously, it's hard to scale up quickly and it's hard to get teams working well together. So what we often find is that we're helping either large companies who are already market leaders respond to that need, or we're helping scale-ups. You know, there's startups that maybe started some years ago but are now really hitting the ramp and scaling up to large size. And as those organizations grow, they go through the same kinds of growing pains that larger clients go through when they try to scale up for new projects. So much of what we're doing is helping to form teams, get teams working well together, get that kind of working relationship and working practices that help the team to move quickly and get through their storming phase or whatever. Yeah. And then I think in doing that, what we find is there's often problems with how should I say this? I suppose getting things done would be the simplest way. So in a lot of large clients, it's difficult to get things done because there are many different competing pressures and lots of different organizational structures or processes that are blocking teams from being as agile as they might otherwise be. And so lots of what we do is help to kind of shine a torch on those and unblock things so that the team can actually keep moving and get things done. And it sounds so obvious, but in these large companies, it's very complex and it's not so obvious until you get a fresh pair of eyes on the problem.
So to put my American twist on it, you're saying big company bullshit tends to get in the way?
Yeah.
See, you're the consultant. You have nice ways to say things.
Yeah, not always bullshit. I would say complexity. So there's genuine complexity in our clients that's really hard to deal with, and it slows them down too much. And so much of what we're doing is bringing new people and teams to give capacity, but also bringing new ways of working to overcome some of those problems.
Nice. So let's just say you have a family friend or a niece or a nephew that's looking to get into the agile world, and they're a college student now, or they're a university student now, or looking to switch into a technical career. What advice would you have for that person? How would you help guide them on a path of success for an agile career?
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's a good question because it's so difficult for young people now. I'm a human starts now. It's so difficult. It's so much more difficult than when I started, I would say. That was a long time ago, mind you. So I think typically, obviously, we find we can get people involved in tech careers even if they didn't study computer science. But certainly a computer science degree is what's really expected these days in the UK, certainly, if you're going to compete with other candidates to get onto the tech ladder in the first place. Typically, people are now looking for a computer science degree. It's not always the case. I'm really happy some of the clients I've worked at and some of the companies I've been employed by have a very positive view towards people coming in that don't, which is great. But it's for sure the best way to compete with the bigger market of graduates coming through. In terms of what to focus on, I'm just thinking, you know, from an agile perspective, I'm not too sure how much of that is being taught in schools or in colleges or universities. I think my advice would be try and go back to those first principles again. Just look at the Agile Manifesto. Think about, I think some of the technical practices from Extreme Programming are really good engineering practices to help get that kind of continuous delivery approach working. I think keeping the way teams work together very, very simple, and try and remember the human side of that more than the process side. Those are the kinds of things that I would emphasize. I think, having said that, Ryan, I'm not too sure what universities are teaching when they're teaching, say, project management practices within universities. I'm sure how they're covering that. My advice always would be try and stick with first principles and remember the people aspect.
Yeah.
I keep repeating that, but I kind of can't emphasize it enough, and not to get too overburdened with all the different methodologies.
No, I think, it's funny. That's great advice. I agree with everything you said. That's great advice for the emerging Agile practitioner. I think that advice works perfectly well with veterans that have been in the industry for a long time and seem to think they understand what it takes to be successful, but they lose sight of those first principles and they lose sight of the empathy that's required to build high performing teams. We get so burdened with certifications and with accolades and all these other things. We forget that the entire reason that we got into this was for building high performing teams and focusing on those core values.
So I think, yeah. So on that front, I guess I would say the learning areas to focus on, wanting to get into being a great team member and later being a team leader or getting into any kind of leadership role, is to focus a lot of attention as well on learning people skills, learning communication skills, learning about leadership, learning about modern ways of managing, so servant leadership, these kinds of things. Because even as a engineer these days, I think you're likely to be working as part of a team. Engineering's so big and complicated for the current kind of technologies that it's no longer an individual game, it's a team game. And so any team member needs to be good at the people side of things as well. So I suppose the other side of that is in the studies and learning, don't neglect the non-technical aspects. And alongside the technical studies, also learn about those things. And like you say, veterans too, we maybe sometimes neglect the people skills, concentrate too much on the tech.
Yeah. And I love that you opened the door to learning, because it feeds right into my next question is, who do you draw your inspiration from? Who are the thought leaders that you tend to gravitate towards, or the books that you find yourself going back to that aren't written by yourself?
there are plenty of those that are not written by me.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question, to be honest, right? And I find I don't gravitate towards like any one person. I generally don't do that. I'm the same with music. You know, I don't follow one band. I listen to all sorts of different songs, or in the case of my reading, I read blog posts and all sorts of different books. And find that I don't have like one or two kind of hero people that I look to. But I do enjoy the fact that now, you know, so many people are able to blog. You can take in a huge amount of different opinions and experiences from all sorts of different people. And I find inspiration in many of those. I remember earlier in my career, my inspiration was people like Bill Gates and even Richard Branson, or maybe obviously Steve Jobs is an inspiration to millions of us. So I definitely get some inspiration from the huge kind of tech leaders or business leaders that have achieved so much. But I think on a personal level, for the stuff that I'm doing day to day, it probably comes from just reading many books and blog posts and finding inspiration in there from a whole plethora of different people.
So, do you remember the last book that you read?
Oh, wow. Which?
Or blog post, I guess.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Don't worry, I got another question chambered that's going to be just as tough.
Go on, I'm trying to remember what it was called, but the name of it is escaping me.
Okay.
Keep going, then.
Well, how about this? You mentioned music. What was the last song you had on your iPhone? The last song you played?
There you go. I don't remember that either. I think that's the point. I'm not a random person. I'm not really someone who follows a particular... this highlights my point perfectly. I'm probably not somebody who follows one artist or one writer or one blogger or something. I'm somebody who puts it on random and with the inspiration I get from all different kinds of articles.
That's awesome. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that I read a book on the train this morning, I probably would be struggling just as much as you. I just want to see if it's a me issue or if it's a everyone issue. So we have a sample size of two now. So I'll say it's everybody.
I'm always reading. So one of the other pieces of advice I would give, and I've given it to many engineers over the years as well, is you're never done with this learning thing.
Agreed.
I've been reading something all the time since I started my career over 30 years ago. I'm never without something to read. And so even though I have obviously a terrible memory for what I read last. So I think I would give that advice to anyone. You know, I don't think you can find time on the job, 9 to 5 or whatever your hours are, to do a great job as an engineer or as a project manager or whatever, and learn enough to be really great at it. I think you have to love what you do enough to study it out of hours and to keep studying it.
That's great. I did one of those last minute holiday bookings. I just booked something for next week, fly out on Sunday. And I think the second most exciting part about that is jumping over to Amazon and finding the books I want to buy just for the flights and for the downtime. And they're all related to the industry. So it's one of those things that once you find your calling, it's definitely, it consumes you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think if you're not into it enough to do that, then it's going to be a struggle because there's so much that needs to be learned. And actually the book came back to me. It was The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz.
Have
you ever read that?
You know what? It's on my wish list, but maybe I'll buy it for the trip. I haven't read that one yet.
I enjoyed it. It's a book that's, there's a lot of storytelling. So he tells the story about his own journey and what he did and what he learned. And I love the fact it's so realistic. I've read so many books that try and get you all pumped up with, you can be anything you want in life, just go for it. But he actually talks through why it's really hard and what really happened in his businesses and what he did and how tough that was. And it's a fantastic, enlightening read. I would recommend it.
That sounds great. I love those books where the author puts himself out there in a vulnerable spot when they talk about the difficulties that they faced, and they're not speaking more from an authoritarian, this is how you do things type approach. So I'll probably hang up this call and then buy the book.
It's a good read.
Cool. So I think coming to a close here, is there anything in particular, any upcoming presentations, appearances, public speaking events that you have coming that the listener should be aware of?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there are still places, but whether this will be out in time. On Wednesday, I'm presenting at an event hosted by Arcadia, who are a big retail company here. Presenting on the topic of business agility and staying ahead. So what does it take to be in a position to really be good at responding to change and the changing roles the changing role of a project manager in that? So that's on Wednesday evening. And then... after that, I'm not sure I am. There'll sure to be some other things coming up over the next few months.
Well, sadly, I think this is going to be a next week release. So hopefully everybody on Wednesday enjoyed your talk and you'll tell them to look out for the podcast.
Yeah, but I keep putting myself out there. I'll keep, you know, doing interviews like this, doing talks at meetups. 101 Ways, my company, I think we'll start to do some meetups as well, make sure we're contributing back into the community directly. So yeah, watch this space.
Yeah. Awesome. And then I guess it's 101, it's 101ways.co.uk. It's where people can find you.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I don't think you're a big Twitter guy, but you are on LinkedIn quite often. So it's Kelly Waters, CEO of 101 Ways on LinkedIn. Anywhere else people can find you?
I guess you'll always find me on my blog, allaboutagile.com. But yeah, you'll find me. I think if you're involved in agile practices anywhere, I'll pop up from time to time. So yeah. LinkedIn is probably the place where I am most nowadays.
Yep. Cool. Well, I appreciate your time today, Kelly. And for anyone listening, you can find more about the Agile Uprising on Twitter at Agile Uprising, or our website, agileuprising.com, or join the free community, the coalition.agileuprising.com. And you can connect with Agile practitioners all around the world. We have a pretty active community with people from damn near every continent. So thanks again, Kelly. I appreciate your time today, man.
No problem. Thanks.
Bye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.